Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Success Made to Last. This is our Legends Show. I'm Rick Tocchini. We have got a great guest on today, Jason Lonsdale from Ogilvy. He has been described by friends and colleagues within the industry as unexpected, insightful, and even a feisty storyteller. Jason is the head of Brand Strategy USA at Ogilvy. Jason, welcome to our Legends Show.
Thanks, Rick. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to hear your voice. And instead of me reading this long resume of you that's quite sensational, why don't you just tell us about your own career journey, starting with where you're from and how did you get into this wonderful industry?
Sure, absolutely. Look, for those listeners who are wondering which part of Australia I'm from the New Zealand part of Australia. So I grew up in New Zealand. I bizarrely studied finance and commercial law, so by right I should be a banker of some variety, which would probably make me much wealthier and much more miserable based on what I see these days. But instead, I sort of had a very circuitous path. I traveled for a long time after college in that sort of, you know, finding yourself period. Came back, realized I wasn't really the person to put a suit and tie on every day. Ended up owning a restaurant, ended up in the music industry after that, doing A&R, and then running a recording studio where we set up a new independent label and so forth. And then I got a phone call from a big research company, and they were looking to set up a sort of a trend hunting, cool hunting division. So, you know, this is like late 90s. So that was, you know, that was the thing back. Gen X, mm-hmm. What's Gen X all about? And so I went to work for them, and we built what became a very successful sort of syndicated youth market, you know, sort of trend research approach. Much harder back then because you didn't have the internet really, right? So we were giving young people disposable cameras and getting them to shoot their life and then come back and take us through it. But by the way, that's much more honest actually than just going on Instagram. But so and went from there, and then I was blessedly lucky to sort of stumble into a job at Colenso BBDO, which you know, at the time and probably still today, one of the best agencies in the country, and probably one of the best agencies in the world. Certainly, you know, we were top 10 in the Gun Report most years I was there, and you know, learnt my craft there. Had an amazing mentor, a lady called Louise Gregg. Shout out to Louise. And you know, was there for sort of 4 or 5 years, and then as young Kiwis are wont to do, we go to seek our fame and fortune overseas. So I took off to London, expecting the, you know, streets to be paved with gold pencil. And actually, as soon as I got there, I realized that actually I'd gone back in time 10 years, and what we were doing in New Zealand was far more progressive, and in many ways interesting than most of what was happening in London. But, you know, and I worked on McDonald's, and this was at the time of Super Size Me and Fast Food Nation, so that was extremely challenging and extremely interesting, but ultimately very rewarding. It was just a little bit like doggy. I then joined Rainey Kelly Campbell, Rolf Young and Rubicon, running Land Rover and Range Rover, which was a global assignment. That was amazing. I got to, you know, we sort of traveled the world with that brand. And then went to Saatchi & Saatchi to work on T-Mobile. And, you know, anyone who's sort of a fan of advertising will remember the big flash mob, the T-Mobile dance execution, from, I guess, 2000. And so, you know, we managed to pull that off for them. It's probably, you know, still one of my, creatively at least, a sort of high watermark. And you know, was there for a good few years and very much loved that agency. For a number of reasons, we were kind of ready to leave London, and I knew the guys at Taxi in Toronto, and they needed a head of planning. So off we go to Toronto. And I'd been there a few months when Michael Ribello, who was my MD at Saatchi London, came calling, and he told me that Saatchi had asked him to take over the Australian operation, which was in fairly poor repair at that stage, and to turn it around. And I was like, dude, I've just moved. I've literally been here. I've only just unpacked. You know, I've been here 3 months. But ultimately, Mike was very persuasive. And so we decamped down to Sydney, where we, you know, really turned that agency around. And it was a, you know, classic three-hander of myself and strategy, Mike as the CEO, and a ridiculously talented executive creative director by the name of David Stapleton. We're very lucky. We worked very hard, but we managed to really turn that agency around over sort of a few year period. And at that point, it was much about my stage of life and how old my kids were and so forth, that we sort of decided maybe we had one more grand adventure in us. And an agency called Mechanism here in New York sort of came calling. And we were like, let's go. We're going to New York for a while. And Mechanism was a small, creatively driven, independent agency based in New York and San Francisco. And was there for a good couple of years. And they were kind enough to support me getting my green card, which sort of enabled me to go freelance for a while after that just see a bit more of the American industry, right? And
sure.
I was working for some different agencies and working directly for some clients. And as anyone who's, you know, been in that sort of freelance position, it's a combination of wonderful liberty and sort of anxiety because you're doing a big job and then you've kind of got to get your next big job lined up. I was sort of quite happy doing that. And then, you know, Ogilvy came calling. They wanted someone to come in and lead brand strategy. To be fair, initially I was not super interested, but I went in and I started meeting people, and I was mainly impressed with just the quality of the human beings that were in that agency.
Mm-hmm.
And some big, you know, meaty clients, you know, and these long, beautiful, long relationships with clients like IBM. I've been, you know, happily there for the last, three years now. There you go. That's my story today.
Well, that's a beautiful journey. And it started with you being in music. Are you a musician?
No, I'm a terrible musician. I have actually no aptitude for it at all, but I'm incredibly passionate about it. Once upon a time, I used to DJ. I used to have a radio show. At various times, people have attempted to teach me. I can play very bad bass guitar. I can sort of vaguely keep time on the root note. Currently trying to teach my 7-year-old guitar, and I'm actually teaching myself. Shout out to Lug Guitars. Anyone who wants to teach their kid, there's a brand called Lug, and they've only got 3 strings, but they play perfectly, and they come in different sizes. I've been futzing around with that as I teach my 7-year-old how to play 3 Little Birds.
keep fussing around with it. Well, listen, you know, when it comes to music, part of our show is always about sound and sonic strategy. And we watched this morning the intro video for Ogilvy. And I am a drummer in a rock band and in a country band as well. I loved the video and the drum beat behind it and what it said about helping people see how to break from the past and to blaze a trail forward. And a question for you is, David Ogilvy was this guy who always thought about that change is our lifeblood. How is David's legacy living in Ogilvy today, and how do you blend in and even take that motto of change is our lifeblood to the next level?
That's a great question. Look, there's a lot of David's, you know, DNA very deeply woven into the agency, right? And especially for an agency, because we have some these large, mature clients, and it's very easy for everyone to get big and everyone to get complacent, right? And I think this concept around sort of change and momentum becomes super important. And again, I'll use IBM as an example, where we have pivoted with IBM 4 or 5 times in the last few decades, right? As they embraced the sort of the e-com era, through to digital becoming much more of a utility in terms of smarter planet and so forth. And I think this idea of being large and agile, it's a challenge, right? But we have to do it. And one of the ways that we do it, and this is another quote from David, is that we all, he talks about we have to hire people that are bigger than ourselves. And if we do that, we become a company of giants, right? And so much of our culture is built upon, bringing up young talent, and especially, sort of diverse young talent. We have an associates program every year. We take on 20 or 25 graduates. It's a fully paid position. They work for us first year, or they rotate through different departments, and at the end of that year, they place into the department that that they've had aptitude for, they've got passion for. So, and I think very few agencies do this. David used to talk about the agency as a teaching hospital. And it's a great analogy, because I think so much, and I'll speak to brand strategy. I'm not sure that brand strategy is a discipline that can be taught. I think it is a discipline that can be learned. So it becomes very incumbent upon us to sort of ensure that we're creating, a learning environment for people, and that we're exposing people to, to other people's thinking and work. This is how my first sort of mentor, we had a very Socratic process. I would go and go, Louise, I don't know what I'm doing. And she would talk about a similar something that she'd worked on in the past, and I'd figure it out. So this idea of, we bringing in fresh perspectives and young talent is one of the key ways that we, we evolve and we stay fresh.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about, because you're trying to start something new and continue to redefine brands. And I'm going to shift over to a specific question for you regarding branding, but this is also going to help us further understand you as what we would consider a legend. And let's start with this. I was taught at Procter, and that's why I'm still brainwashed 40 years later, that a great brand is a story that never stops unfolding. How would you describe a great brand?
I quite like that definition, but I think that the first thing I always say is that we have to recognize that as marketers, we do not own or control a brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
A brand is a manifestation of a product or service in the hearts, hopefully in the hearts and minds of people who interact with it. And that, for me, is the golden rule. We have to respect the people we are communicating with. We have to understand the people we're communicating with. And I think so much of our industry doesn't do that. Think about some of the language we use. We talk about target markets. We have all this weird militaristic language, campaigns, right? We talk about brand campaigns providing air cover. I think this, there's this increasing tendency to see people as data points, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it's why so much of, so much sort of performance marketing, is not great, And because it fails to remember that its job is to talk to people, and that a brand has to be a human-friendly construct. It's not that a brand is human. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and they were talking about brands should be more human. I said, no, they're not human. People don't, no one thinks a brand is a person. They need to be more human-friendly. So, you know, and that gets you out of all those horrible exercises of trying to do brand personality matrices and having arguments about whether this brand is friendly or confident. All brands are confident, apparently. so, you know, I all of this starts with, you know, to your story metaphor, it really starts with who's hearing that story, right? And making sure they're operating in service to them, because they're the ones who actually control our brand, the destiny of our brand. And, you know, and the reality is for most brands, you know what? Most people do not care about most brands. And we see this, there's so much data that, you know, people wouldn't care if 80% of the brands out there disappeared tomorrow. People see 80% of brands in the market as homogeneous and undifferentiated. I think we live in interesting times. There's data barbarians at the gate on one side. I don't think they are barbarians. I think that we have to all work together and figure out how to be more humanistic in the stories we use data to tell. And, you know, this sort of alleged conflict between brand and performance marketing also needs to be, you know, resolved, if not retired. You know, it's the cases of, if you look at the work of, you know, Burnett and Fields from the UK, that argument's been resolved. The answer is both.
Yeah, very good. I appreciate that commentary. And let's shift over to this. Let's talk a little bit about sonic strategy. And it's something that I've been interested in for so many years. And I saw a statistic recently, Jason, that said that hearing is our fastest sense. And it takes us humans roughly 0.17 seconds to respond to an audio stimulus versus 0.25 for a visual stimulus. And you've been in the industry a long time. What would you say is your favorite brand sound?
I'm slightly brainwashed because I worked on McDonald's for so long. So, you know, the first example I always go to is da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
And it does give me PTSD, caveat. but I think, like, now, if I was to answer this question back then, that's the age of the Intel thing and McDonald's and all of these devices, right? I think right now, you know, anyone who, if you're thinking about your sonic strategy in those terms, I think we're missing some tricks, right? We live in an age of Alexa and Siri and whatever other branded digital, you know, assistant one has. We live in an age of podcasts like this one. And, yeah, I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge music fan. I love listening to podcasts. I have, you know, way too many pairs of headphones as a consequence. And I think, you know, brands need to take this seriously. And interestingly, this is something that we're working on at Ogilvy. One of my colleagues, a guy called Rob Davis, and this is very much his wheelhouse. So we're currently looking at, you know, what are some of the interesting, unexpected ways that brands can really, you know, think about the entire auditory element of their brand experience.
Right. So,
you know, if any listeners are out there listening, hit us up because we are looking for experimental models.
That's cool. But you know what? Inside Ogilvy, though, I was doing a little research before the show, and I came across the fact that you guys work with Darden Restaurants, which to my recollection is Red Lobster, which also to my recollection is Red Lobster is for the seafood lover in you. And then I came across the fact that you guys have Nationwide, which is one of the great. And it's, but sonic strategy goes way beyond a jingle like Nationwide is on your side. It's really about that emotional tie-in. And it's, I think back to one of our fun questions we ask on this podcast is, if you, Jason Lonsdale, had a theme for yourself, what is that theme going to sound like? What is it? Is it a Beatles song, or what is it?
That's a great question. It's like what's your walk-on song?
You got it.
I think once upon a time I'd have said something punchy, like, you know, maybe sort of a James Brown track, or, you know, Eye of the Tiger.
James Brown.
The older I get, the more likely it is to actually be something quite opposite. I've been listening to a lot of, there's an amazing, a couple of albums that Alice Coltrane, who was John Coltrane's widow, and a musician, an amazing musician in their own right, recorded in India. So it's this kind of crazy intersection of, like, you know, Indian spiritual music, but with analog synthesizers. I think my soundtrack these days is far more meditative and less punchy.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun. Okay, Jason, we're going to now carry you forth into what we call the lightning round, which is where we ask some pretty rapid-fire questions, and they're very random, but it's become a signature part of our legendary show. So here goes. What do your friends bring out the best in you?
My happiness. My friends bring out all my happiness.
Wow, that's cool. Okay, so what is more important to you, actual experiences or the memories that remain?
Actual experiences, 100%.
Okay, and to that end, what is the singular best family vacation that you've had with your kids?
I'm an enormous Star Wars nerd. So for my son's 10th birthday, we went to Galaxy's Edge down in Florida, which was breathtaking in terms of what they've done in terms of the storytelling that is implicit in that place. Oh, sorry, my dog's barking at me. All of the people who work there are in character. There is a complete suspension of disbelief. So, you know, there is this mastery that Disney has, right, of that sort of métier, and successfully leave it an enormous amount of money out of my wallet. But it was fantastic.
Oh, cool. Okay, next, you have been described as a feisty storyteller. Who is the singular greatest mentor you've had in your life who's taught you how to tell stories?
That's a great question. I don't know if there's one. I think there's things that I've learned from so many people that I've worked with. Damon Stapleton, who I mentioned earlier, was my creative partner in Sydney, an amazing, amazing storyteller. He's a hilarious, charming, wise individual. My creative director at Saatchi's in London was a gentleman called Paul Sylvan, who sadly passed away maybe a year ago. Extremely talented, extremely humble, but just, you know, and he was quite a quiet man, but just came out with the right thing at the right time, right? And then he's probably got the best historical reel of any creative I've ever met. He did, you know, John West Bear Fight. He did all the John Smith, the Peter Kay campaign in the UK. So certainly sort of Paul Sylvan. From a strategy perspective, Richard Huntingdon, who was at Saatchi in London, he's still there. Amazing, amazing strategist and storyteller as well. So many. I think that, you know, we get influenced by so many people along our path, and I'm certainly a different person than I was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But that's sort of the joy of what we do. I get to go to work, or I get to, you know, be on Zoom these days with some, you know, brilliant, smart people that we all learn from each other.
Isn't it great to celebrate mentors like that? I hope that you send this podcast out to those individuals with a big thank you, because that's what makes the world go round. Okay, just a couple more questions for our special guest here on Success Made to Last legends, Jason Lonsdale of Ogilvy. If you were expelled from the U.S. or New Zealand, where would you go and why?
I do actually have a desire to live in Tokyo. I visited there, I think, two or three times, but never for that long. I adore the culture, very much adore the food. And also my eldest son is massively into, you know, sort of manga and anime and all things Japanese, including the food. I think it would be fascinating to live somewhere that is so, you know, culturally rich and culturally different, you know, from the places I've lived in, being, you know, Australia, England, America, New Zealand, Canada. They're all different, but they've all got a similar vibe. Whereas, I think Tokyo would be an enormous amount of fun and excitement, and it would be very educational, going somewhere so different.
Sure. That's cool. Okay, if you were cast in the next Star Wars movie and you could be in any character from any of the Star Wars, who's that character?
Obi-Wan Kenobi, no doubt.
Of course.
the sage, the magician, the...
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of, you know, of sort of Joseph Campbell and so on and so forth, right? And I'll bring this one back to branding and advertising, which is, you know, there's always, every so often, brands get excited and they do the hero's journey and they talk about what their brand archetype is and they talk about their, you know, their heroic journey as a brand. And what's interesting is that the brand is never the hero, right? The consumer is the hero. The brand is Obi-Wan. The brand is who brings the consumer the gift to heal the broken world. The brand is Gandalf. So that sort of, and plus I've got so much gray hair on my beard, it's inescapable these days.
Of course it is. Okay, listen, there's only a few more questions to ask, and this one may get at the heart of you as you look forward in life as a dad, husband, and all the other roles that you are now playing. What do you strive most for? Accomplishment, love, power, excitement, knowledge, or something else?
Peace and love. The world does not need more people fixated on power. That's one of the things that has frankly broken this country, I believe. And you know, while power is always available, the question is about whether one should take it. I'm a firm believer that, you know, in sort of the peaceful path going forward and the collaborative path and the path that brings the most people along, that promotes the most inclusivity and diversity and equity. Because that's what the world needs right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Hey, Jason, this show is called Success Made Last, and you've now been recognized as one of our legends. And the irony of this is that we think success is a lousy teacher and that it seduces smart people into thinking that they can't lose. If we were being tucked in tonight as one of your children and they looked up at you and they said, Daddy, what is success? How are you going to define that for your kids and for us today?
Success is, at the end of every day, knowing that you put in more than you took out, that you operated with kindness, with empathy, and that you know, whatever it is that you touched, whatever that school assignment or your job, that you left it in a better place than you found it. And, you know, that's not about selfishness. It's not about whether it benefited you or not. There is absolutely, you know, an objective to make things better. That's our job.
Mm. That's a legendary answer, Mr. Lonsdale. Thank you for being on our show. We really do appreciate you. And where can our listeners, which a lot of them are from Fortune 500 companies, how can they contact you regarding your great company?
So I'll happily share my email address, jason.lonsdale@ogilvy.com. If you want to stalk me in other ways, I'm at Jason Lonsdale on most of the social media platforms. And I think I'm the only Jason Lonsdale on LinkedIn, although there might be an accountant in Texas that I share a name with. But I'm fairly easy to find.
That's great. Jason, thanks for taking time to be on our show. We appreciate it, and our best to you, your family, your company, and thanks again.
Thank you, Rick. It was a pleasure and an honor.
Well, likewise. That was Jason Lonsdale from Ogilvy, and we sure appreciate him being on our show today. He's the head of brand strategy for the USA at Ogilvy. Fantastic company. Most of you that listen to this show already know about them, but now you know more because you've got some insight on one of their wonderful leaders that we consider legendary. Hey, we want to thank the sponsors of this particular program, Gracefully Yours greeting cards and journals. You can go to gracefully-yours.com today and get 25% off any of their greeting cards just by plugging in the promotion code BOOK3, that's BOOK3, and they will make sure and give you the 25% discount just for your support of Success Made Last. Also, thanks to Edward Jones Financial Advisors. Ours happens to be Servan Maracini. You can contact him at Servan Maracini at edwardjones.com. Fantastic man of integrity, great leadership, guidance to our organization when it comes to finances. Thanks again for joining us. As we always say, may you move your life from ordinary to extraordinary. Have a great week.